This is International Insights, conversations with experts and entrepreneurs on principles of management and leadership, produced by Dr. Joe Shkembri from the Faculty of Economics, Management and Accountancy.
Welcome to International Insights, stories from the real economy. My name is Joe Shkembri. Building a legacy organization requires deep, long-term relationships. In our conversation with Anthony Diacono, we talk about how his company MedServe grew thanks to the strong relationships it developed with clients, employees, and stakeholders. I ask this international entrepreneur about understanding people, cultures, and systems, and why choosing the path less traveled while challenging delivers unique benefits. Anthony, thanks for being with us today. First of all, thanks for finding time to do this. Let me take you back to the origins of MedServe, but more specifically to the first international opportunity that you had. What was the experience there, and how did it kind of trigger the whole internationalization process?
First of all, thank you, Joe, for having me. I hope our discussion will be of interest to your viewers. You mentioned going back to where we started, and that's a long way. We've been in business now for 45 years. I got involved in the company later than that, when I purchased the company with my partner and we took it forward. When we started, MedServe was only in Malta. Our orders and our contracts were actually in North Africa, so if you like, we were already only in export business. But one of the biggest dangers we had was we realized that we relied on one country and basically one large client with all the small ones that come along with us. And that is definitely not a good, comfortable position to be in. So from day one, our target was to expand. We have to go regional, especially in the sector we operate in. We are an oil and gas. Now we are called an energy, as is the modern terminology we use in our industry, providing integrated logistics to this energy sector, especially offshore. We went ahead to produce our service levels in the sense to improve our product and make ourselves known in the market. The first big project we really got involved with that set us off was the gas pipeline from North Africa, from Libya to Europe. We were involved in all of that, and that really spurred us on. And then things from there started moving on, rolling forward. So it's been quite a trip, and I think quite a successful trip with the ups and downs like everything else in life.
And as you went along following that project, I guess based on the experience of that project, you had a number of other, great opportunities or projects that kind of defined the company from then on. Give us a bit of an idea of, that journey in terms of milestones and therefore where you are today in terms of presence.
Well, it is a process. As you're building, it's a process, step by step, brick by brick. You have to obviously, as I hinted, make sure you're offering something that is required by the clients that you are trying to serve. So you have to make sure, for us it was very important to make sure that we've developed the right suite of services. We then moved on to building the relationships that is needed in the sector. All of this leads to opportunities. As we gained credibility, we were being invited to tender for different projects. This happened over years, not months. We did make mistakes along the way. We did have setbacks. But in the end, if you weigh the whole thing, it was all positive. As we gained credibility, we got more invitations to participate in tenders. we started getting a high rate of success of scores, wins, and that spurred us on. So a lot will be going on in the background. You have to study where we think the market is going to be in the future, what are the requirements, and you build and adapt to the situation and go for
it.
Well,
after the main kind of pipeline project within Malta and Europe, what was kind of the second, you know, and the other important kind of milestone?
The important milestone, I think, was our first step, if you like, to invest outside of Malta.
Okay.
All right. We had already done a step by going to North Africa and opening actually a physical base over there. But that for us was nearly our backyard. We had been operating in there. We wanted to spread further. The Eastern Med became a very important region for this business, and we set our eyes on Cyprus. Cyprus was a completely different kettle of fish for us. We were investing in an EU nation. We were investing in a country that had no record of successful fossil fuel discoveries. Everything was new, and I must admit, there was a lot of resistance to us coming in to that market by my colleagues now and competitors in country. We were seen as a threat coming in. So we
because
had to
a relative newcomer back then, or
we in Cyprus. First of all, the industry was new to them.
Okay.
The traditional companies that used to do port handling and stuff like that thought this is going to be an opportunity for them. When they saw us coming in, we were perceived as a threat. That is the basic truth of the matter. We were a threat because we were competing, and eventually we actually secured 90% of the business in Cyprus. So that's getting that right, moving and having a lovely base in Cyprus, I think was the first real big milestone for us to achieve. And from there, then we could spread to other areas.
Just for me to understand how the model works, and what did you do exactly in Cyprus? Is it a base that you go in and build essentially and therefore service what's happening in the area? How does it happen?
Well, similar to the bases we have in Malta and we had in Libya, you are actually, shall I call it a boutique port, okay, where you have a dedicated quay and the hinterland with the relevant warehouses and any engineering that is required, workshops and all the stuff. So in Cyprus, we managed to locate such a site, which was really adaptable for the work we want to do. One of the difficulties, we even had a Malta here with our stakeholders, the bankers and other people, is to understand what our business is.
Okay.
It is not moving a box from A to B and hauling stuff around. It is much more than that. We become part of the company that is drilling for oil or producing gas or other things. We form part of their link of business and make sure that things go smoothly for them over there. We have developed management systems, we have developed IT systems, we have accounting packages specific for them, okay. Real-time products to deliver to them. So it is a very specialized thing. As a matter of fact, I am quite proud to say that we are now considered the top three globally in terms of,
okay,
of firms.
Okay.
And that is quite an achievement.
Of course.
So basically, we set up shop in Cyprus. We had our main client who was the first person over there, and then we started with the other clients that also joined in the Eastern Med.
So Cyprus was kind of the first kind of international milestone where you became known a little bit in the industry and in the network, because I believe it's a network which is probably quite small, no?
Very small. You hit on a very important thing. We have the advantage that maybe there are 12 clients we're interested in globally, the big names in our sector. We are on the global vendor list of all of them. We were very surprised, and I have to be careful not to mention certain confidential information, when, for example, one of the largest companies in the world decided to rationalize its vendors, and in our sector they brought it down to about six.
Okay.
We are one of the six globally, to give you where we have managed to arrive. Yes. And I'm talking about mega companies, you know.
Okay.
We're talking about the Exxons,
exactly,
the BPs, the Shells,
the
real,
gas,
the real
the
big players
field.
In the energy field. Why? Because we have we are now seen as part of this, a solution to them, and that is the key.
Yeah.
You have to give value, otherwise,
absolutely.
Just
but obviously, in the sense, Cyprus was a very important learning experience, I guess. What happened then? Was it easier to attain your business beyond Cyprus?
Yes, Cyprus was the first step, if you like, where once again we proved we're a bit mad, as some of the people around me said, because when we went in, operations had not started. There was the conflict with Turkey, which was hindering operations. We were not welcomed initially, although now I am more, very happy over there, and they're happy with us. So that taught us a lot, and that introduced us and to the other companies that were interested in the area, and they saw our resilience and the fact that we deliver. You know, from there, we had to then react to further developments, because while we were talking about all this period, we had downturns, we had civil wars in some of our main markets, revolutions, exactly. NATO intervening and bombing everything out of, including our base.
But this is beyond Cyprus, of course, you're saying.
Yes, but it changed again the landscape of where we operate. So we had to take another big step, which is go invest in what we call easy oil countries. In other words, if you invest, for example, in deep sea project areas where there's a lot of deep sea, that's a very expensive operation. And to extract fossil fuel at that depth costs a lot. So we decided, and we sought out to get to invest in the Middle East, where it costs between $6 to $8 a barrel to extract oil.
Okay.
So it's very competitive, and I wanted to remove the fluctuations in business. We actually bought a group of companies, and for Metserv it was a major investment of 45 million euros.
When was this approximately?
This was about six years ago already.
Okay.
Already, time flies.
Okay.
This was a group of company called Metz. And they were not doing what we do, but it was complementary.
Oh, right, okay.
Because not only did we want to break into a new market, we wanted to add on a new suite of services.
And they obviously probably knew that the Middle Eastern market better than you, I guess.
Definitely. We had never worked in the Middle East, maybe on a one-off, so we wouldn't consider ourselves experts, so we bought the expertise. But more importantly, we bought the relationships that this group of company has. That is for me key. Yeah. Suddenly, on my client list, I had all the major world producers of pipes that are used in our industry. And names like Sumitomo, Vallourec, Tenaris, there are about five.
It became accessible like to you suddenly.
We are now recognized, we are now in there with them. And then you start having the synergies, and with them, we are now looking at other markets, other locations in the world,
right,
where we can continue expanding.
But between Cyprus, which was the first international kind of major opportunity, and your acquisitions, and where you are today in terms of presence, of course, a lot has happened. You had other projects, because you are present in other places in the Middle East and other, I believe even in Central America somewhere, no?
Correct. Yes, we continued developing. And if I could do it, try and do it chronologically, the next step was we went into Egypt.
Okay.
Again, a difficult market to get in, but we were being pressurized by our clients.
Okay, you were following the client, really.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The clients, after all, the client goes where there's the material, where there's the business, we have to go there to service them. And it is really, gratifying that the client tells you, listen, in 2 years' time, I'm going to be there. Whether you like it or not, you have to come.
Okay.
We need you
but
to be there.
That's an opportunity, of course.
Exactly.
And a challenge.
And that proves that we have developed the relationship that we worked so hard to achieve. So we're in Egypt, developing that nicely. We're in the Middle East. And then we were invited to the Caribbean. We managed to win a nice contract in Suriname, which I had never heard of, actually. I had never heard of before. We actually did. Yes, we, with all due respect to my friends over there before. I would say we are now first movers in that part of the world. And I can see us moving into Guyana and maybe Trinidad as we go along.
Opportunities on that side of the world, how do they come about? Is it essentially because, you're in the network nowadays and things happen a bit naturally, or do you do an actual, marketing effort?
I don't think we've spent €1 on marketing.
Okay.
It is all about building relationships because we can, because our business allows it. As I said, there are 10 companies we target, the main ones, and then you have, with those, then come the very big companies, the subcontractors that produce the chemicals and all the other stuff that is needed in our operation. It's by word of mouth, and by making sure we always deliver what we promise. It's interesting that when we go from country to country, we end up meeting, for example, the head of a department will be the same man we met 3 years ago in another
because
part of the world.
Because people remain in the industry.
Yes, and everybody moves with exactly. the project.
Exactly. It works because the relationship is built, and it's because obviously you have a reputation which you build by, you know, delivering, of course. So the two go together.
Very much so, and I don't want to give the impression you just sit back and it comes to you. No,
exactly.
It took years of developing the product, developing the relationship, and an important point we haven't spoken about is, you know, you have to develop your in-house personnel. The capability internally is key in a service company. Yeah.
Today you are present in so many countries, and like you're explaining, it's really one network where you have a lot of deep relationships in various countries. What have you learned about dealing with people from different cultures over this time?
Well, being a service company, you really have to enjoy working with people and making sure you understand how to deal with people and never forget that they are people. No matter which part, we are now on 4 continents, and no matter which part of the world we operate out of, I have only found 2 types of people.
Okay.
Those that work and those that work less.
Okay.
Those are really, that is the difference we see. Yes, you have to be switched on, and you have to learn how, you know, the traditions of the local of the locals, because you don't want to create problems when it can be avoided if we educate ourselves.
Okay.
Not educate
ourselves.
In other words, we have to learn what they expect from us. We can train them to achieve a certain level of service, and that is global. You train people with the same program. But then there are certain things you have to know how to do, and not to offend the local traditions. I remember one particular incident in the beginning, driving, you know, all excited. I was younger, still had black hair, and, you know, we used to be packed in this exciting time, traveling around the world, tight schedules, and I think it was North Africa. We were traveling from one area to another, and when you travel by car in these areas, you know, our HSC people have to vet the route we're taking, they have to vet the driver if he's up to standard to be accepted, and all these things. And rather tight schedule, I had to catch a flight to go somewhere else. So we were zooming along, dust flying everywhere to get to the airstrip, and suddenly this very nice gentleman who was driving stops, disappears. I'm sitting in the heat over there. Flight to catch, the whole program going haywire, getting upset, blood pressure going up, blah, blah. All it was is we didn't factor in that at a certain time of the day, no matter what you're doing, they stop because they attend prayer.
Okay, it's prayer time. Okay.
So who made the mistake? Did he make the mistake? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
Or was it the planning? Which wasn't
it right? Was the planning that we didn't factor in something that for them is extremely nice. He never thought, you know, that is wrong, and it caused chaos, you know, just because we didn't get it right.
Exactly.
So you do have to put in the local, you know, the local requirements. The rest, you'll find, as I said, and I'll end on this note, there are 2 people, and I think it's important, this, those that work, and those, and you find them anywhere.
Exactly. Those that work mean hardworking, you mean? Okay. Not that work in a set with
the others don't interest me, it's the hardworking.
Okay.
The people who we've managed to convince that they are part of the organization.
Exactly.
That they are not clocking in at a certain time to clock out at a they have a mission to achieve, they are recognized for that achievement, and they give you not 100%, we get 120.
Great.
You know, that is...
But creating, I guess, that culture of people contributing to a bigger, you know, reality and organization is obviously a feat in itself. You've worked with many teams, of course, in different countries. What's a high-performing team? Is it just people who, you know, want to work? I'm sure it's a bit more than that.
It is more than that. I must admit, it gets more difficult as you grow.
Okay.
When we started off, I think we were 60 people. We have now topped 500, so it gets very difficult to maintain a personal relationship. But you have to build insistence then that allow you to achieve the same goals. So you build a relationship with the next layer that you are mostly in contact with.
Right.
And they, you expect them to build a relationship with the next layer and so forth, so that everybody gets the same ethos across across the group. And as much as possible, the leader of the group has to find time to visit, recognize people's work,
yeah.
and try and keep a personal touch. It's amazing what a thank you can do yeah. to a person after slogging away at a project, you know, and then some CEO in a far-flung country takes all the praise,
exactly.
and the man who actually had to do it is completely right. forgotten.
Okay. Major, you know, decisions that were right for the company and, you know, major mistakes you've done over time. Or the company has done, sorry.
No, no, I can shoulder that responsibility too. One of my biggest, look, one of the areas we wanted to get into, we've been targeting for the last 5 years, is Africa. And I don't mean North Africa, but we're already established. Africa offers a lot in the future, especially in our sector, in the energy sector. So we have been targeting Africa. And we spent time and money trying to identify where to start. And I was all hyped up about this. And the country we were going to go in with as a first thing was Tanzania. We got it wrong. And I take full responsibility. It cost us 3 years of that. And where did we get it wrong? Because in our discussions and analysis, we had a lot of risks we wanted to try and mitigate before we would take the step. And we decided to partner up with a very large international company that could probably assist us in doing our work, because we wanted like some insurance and some guarantee. And we partnered with them and we made a joint bid for a large project. We made it to the final, but there is only one winner, and that wasn't us. We lost. And obviously, these companies are very serious. After we lost, they did have a hold the post-mortem with us, and they explained to us what happened. And they were very, very, we realized, and then that they separated us for the post-mortem, the big firm and tiny, tiny Metzer. And we realized that we went to bed with somebody who was so strong, so big, the client realized that we would not really, although it was a 50-50 JV, we would not really be in control of what we want
50.
To do.
Okay.
I think that came across so clear. To keep putting it simply, and we lost out. And I am to blame for that, because I should have seen. So learning experience, and you move on.
Exactly.
That, I think, is my one of the things that really annoyed me in the process, because it threw us back in our development in that part of the world for quite some time. The only good thing that came out of that is I headhunted the man who beat us, and he joined our
Speaking about small networks, of course.
Exactly, and he joined our group and helped us develop then going forward.
Interesting. What would be your, you know, one or three words of advice, you know, to someone who's really taking internationalization seriously?
Okay, I think that's an appropriate question for this session to end on. Everybody can participate in export, but there are certain rules that have to be observed. Number one is you have to analyze what you're offering out there. You have to make sure you have something that is needed. I like to go into markets that are difficult. I'm not going to go into the easiest market where there is every Tom, Dick and Harry, because margins are going to be low, competition is going to be high, and the rate of success is the lowest possible. So we choose difficult markets with a good prospect, where my margins are satisfactory, and I also have protection because it's difficult to get in, barriers for entry. Make sure you always deliver. Learn to say no, not to offer something, button the run down, then I can do it. Learn to say no. After you analyze everything and you come to a conclusion that you want to do this, then go for it, and no half measures. You have to go for it as though there's no tomorrow.
And execute with detail.
Yes, and then execute.
Absolutely.
Then execute. Yeah. Don't dilly-dally, because you'll be overtaken and you won't even realize, what happens. Yeah.
You make it sound so easy and so much fun.
Believe me, it's not, but it is fun.
Great.
It is fun.
That's important. This has been great fun, Anthony. I'd like to thank you for finding time to do this. It's very, very useful for us. In this series, we talk to experts and entrepreneurs on leadership and management issues. We have episodes on emerging out of a crisis, driving innovation, the digital imperative, attracting talent, seizing key opportunities, and the leadership lessons we can learn from the world of sport. The series also includes 4 interviews with international entrepreneurs based in Malta. International Insights was originally recorded for Trade Malta and made possible thanks to HSBC.